Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, had a great Saturday, Tip. Thank you for asking. Hope your travels went well.
Good. They were not too bad.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
I can never remember where I was. Yes, I was at Army this past weekend. So that was really cool to be up there. I had another CIC game. If you don't know, that's a Commander-in-Chief game. Army, Navy, Air Force, all competing for the Commander-in-Chief trophy at the end of the year. So that was Army's first Commander-in-Chief game. And yeah, we had a bit of breaking news to start the game quarterback-wise. So things were interesting for us over the weekend.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
You don't want to talk about that?
No, I don't want to talk about that.
That's going to be good and man up.
You don't want to talk about it? You sure?
I'm positive. I don't want to talk about that.
Tiff, coming up in 2 hours when we get to man up.
Because that game should be taken off the board.
No, that's not
because
true.
I picked that it under a false
the
premise. There was no reports out that I saw.
There were well, hey, talk to the broadcast team. We didn't know either.
See?
You know, stuff went without getting into too much detail. So we had our normal meetings and things like that. But yeah, we were not made aware until a little bit before kickoff. So, but that's always makes for a fun moment TV wise. At least on my end, I don't have to deal with the graphics and everything. So shout out to our great team. But I'm trying to stake out coaches, trying to find an OC or someone to be like, hey, your starting quarterback's not going. I need something so I can rethink what I was going to start the game with. And so it ends up all coming together. But
yeah,
so sorry to you.
I protest, Dylan. I think that game should be taken off the board because there were unforeseen circumstances that altered the pick that I made. But we can kind of break it down more. You can make your ruling on the Army game if it should come off the board for me.
Oh, I mean, I have my decision right now. What's done is done. That's it.
Thank you. Thank
all right, well,
you. Thank you.
You and your new haircut are dead to me. Let's talk about the Falcons.
Fresh. Yeah.
How about that? Like, how about the fact that we didn't screw around? I don't like – there is something I did not like about yesterday's game.
Oh, no.
And I know we'll get to it later, but it's – And I think it's something that this team will learn, so we'll get to that. But you had a team that came out with their hair on fire, too, in Dallas. They came out ready to go offensively. They went right down the field in their first possession. And then they kicked the field goal. You're able to get them off. Caden Ellis played his best game of the season yesterday, 13 tackles.
I thought as a duo, Landman and Ellis played their best game as a duo, maybe, that I've seen.
It's the first time all year that I've seen – and it felt like for the first time all season, Caden Ellis played free. Okay, he just played like someone unlocked him. His hair was on fire. He was going through blocks. He was just knifing through plays. I mean, the play he makes on the first drive on the screenplay, they must have ran 15 screenplays yesterday.
Yeah, well, that was their running game. That was, well, it has been their running game.
Because it turns out they ran the ball well, too.
I was going to say, it wasn't so much yesterday, but it has been their running game. I think that's why they've become so efficient at it. Yeah, I agree with you, though. That was a heck of a play, knifing through past my guy, Zach Martin, which is just, it was, you know, it's been hard to watch him. I mentioned that on Friday. But, yeah, he knifed right through there, man. It's a good call.
Ellis played his best game. I'm not sure if it was Ebbe Cady's best game, but I will tell you that it's his best stat line. Because I know that people are going to say, well, that's stupid. That's the dumbest thing you could say. But I think he's made an impact, and I think Raheem thinks he's made an impact this season. But it's there have been, but you know, they've had moments where maybe there was a holding call that took or there was a penalty on the play that he made, and Rod took it off the board. But it was his best stat line for sure. He played like his hair was on fire
you
too.
You sound like you're happy with the defense overall. Are you happy with the three sacks? And I give credit to the Falcons defense who have struggled in that aspect. We've talked about it here on the show. It's been talked about nationally. It's a lot of what they talked about during the game, actually. But they were able to rack up three alone in this one.
Yeah, Grady Jarrett played with his hair on fire, too.
Who, unfortunately, had to leave the game with an Achilles strain, just precautionary. But according to Troy McElhaney of the Falcons website, falcons.com, he says he felt good. So it's
I think it's one of those things you don't want to push.
You don't want to push it. But continue your thought.
You don't want to push it. I saw Grady after the game. I think he's fine. I think he'll play probably Sunday. If he doesn't, I wouldn't expect it to be more than one game. I know it's an area where you don't want to lose anybody up front, especially a guy like Grady. Grady Jarrett was just, I mean, he came out unreal to start. And he probably could have had more. I thought Dallas got away with a couple holes, including one of their touchdowns. They got away with a hold on Ebikadi. Ebikadi gave them all they could handle. Tyler Guyton was.
Buddy, I felt bad for him yesterday.
And let me look.
Man,
I don't want to go too far in the weeds to start off because I know we wouldn't need to get to the offense and what Kirk and Bijan and company did. But Ebikadi played 70% of your snaps yesterday, and D'Angelo Malone.
I was like, let's not bury the lead. I looked over it, I think, Goforth, either at the end of the first or early second quarter, and he had his binoculars out. You know, Goforth, he's got his binoculars out. And I look and I go, dude, is that D'Angelo Malone down there on the edge right now with Damon Harris at the three? I don't want to say shocked. Like, shocked is way too strong of a word. But when I saw D'Angelo Malone actually rushing the edge, I was like, I don't know that I've ever watched that. Like, you know, outside of preseason. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen that, man. So,
and he made a play.
Yeah, I thought he looked explosive.
He made a great read on another screen play. and I think that was to the fullback. Hepner, I think is his name, or Lepner, or whatever it was. But made a great play, a great read on the screen that was to Lepke. And that's, I mean, I don't know where that's been. You know, D'Angelo Malone doesn't see the field unless it's special teams, but I'm glad that we haven't traded him yet for Max Crosby in a seventh, because he's out there balling.
I gotta take him
off the board now. I don't know, man. I have to take him off the board.
Yeah, for D'Angelo Malone in seventh, I'd probably still do that.
Kirk Cousins, what, 7 touchdowns in his last 2 games?
And the red zone, they were perfect in the red zone for the 3rd consecutive game, going 3-for-3,
which is what they needed to be, because this was the worst red zone defense in the NFL. The Cowboys were, and so you needed to be efficient in the red zone. It was something that. You haven't been near as good in the red zone as it turns out. I mean, as you would think, for a team that's averaging 24 points a game, you scored another 3 points over your average. You were just a couple points shy of 30. I mean, you look at what Kirk Cousins did and how efficient he was. Darnell Mooney had another touchdown, another, what, 88 yards? Yeah, I know Drake had the great touchdown catch early in the game, and then he went out with the hip injury, but once again, Bijan Robinson just does what he does. 5.5 yards a touch again. 145 yards from scrimmage yesterday. He's been phenomenal. This season, Bijan Robinson has 935 yards from scrimmage this year. All-purpose yards, right? 5.5 yards a touch and 5 touchdowns. He is quietly having, I mean, if Derrick Henry's not on pace to almost have 2,000 yards as a rusher, people have to be talking about Bijan Robinson as being one of the best running backs in football. And he still is in that, to me.
Yeah, and we're going to see one of those other guys next week when you take on the New Orleans Saints. Alvin Kamara, massive day yesterday as well. And obviously we'll dive into that throughout the week with that matchup coming up. But I'm with you. I the Falcons post-game notes they put out, they point to the fact that Kirk Cousins has a passer rating of 144 for the 2nd consecutive week. It's the 8th time in his career. But last week when he did this, it was the first time in 7 years he was able to pull off a 144 passer rating. And you're like, oh, that's crazy. Like, he did that for the 7th time in his career. Does it again. Just the efficiency that he is working with right now. Not only that, But can we talk about his relationship with Darnell Mooney for a second? A couple of huge fourth down plays to Darnell Mooney. Both of those throws on fourth down, he threw the ball before Darnell was looking, right? You got the rub route, obviously the touchdown on the fourth, and then like a 10-yard out that he throws before Darnell comes out of his break, which was just excellent. So he's operating at a high level right now. The protection, Bo, the protection was very, very good. Obviously yesterday, so hats off to those guys up front as well.
Yeah, they gave up three sacks yesterday, the Falcons offensive line did, but I don't think that three of those sacks, all of those sacks were on it. In fact, I think it was the second sack that they gave up was a coverage sack. Was literally, if Dak is your quarterback, cross the yard, you probably get a 10-yard run out of it because it was Kirk was moving, trying to find. And what had happened was, is Jake Matthews, and Mike, you tell me if I'm wrong, but from what I saw, Jake Matthews did everything. He did his job. Did everything he was supposed to do to a T. And when you push edge rushers out of plays and your quarterback kind of sits in the pocket and slowly climbs in it, you give that guy a chance to get back into play, and that's kind of what happened. And then another one was Kyle Pitts. I think it's going to be a lot like when Vita Vea got a sack and Bijan Robinson was the guy who was lined up. I think Rod's going to say, yeah, we don't want Carl Lawson lined up on Kyle Pitts. That's not how that's supposed to work out.
Unfortunately, that is the way it was designed, but I think if they had that one back, they'd say, that's probably not a good matchup for us. Let's move on. So I don't know, man, but yeah, I thought the line played well, and I'm glad you said not all of them were the line's fault. Matter of fact, I don't think two of the three were. So there you go.
It's kind of like you can pick your poison now when you're talking about this offense. And it kind of didn't even matter, even though you were missing your star receiver for the remainder of the game. Who stepped up? That's next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Cowboys showing pressure. Snap to Kirk. Here they come. Got to get rid of it. Live for Mooney. Caught. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Atlanta. Fourth and one is the home run ball for Darnell Mooney.
That's Wes Durham on the call. He's also along with Dave Archer and producer extraordinaire Bo Morgan as he belches on Falcons radio.
Well, I didn't belch on the air, but
know,
you outed
but
me,
I
Jeff.
Had to. It was loud
Thanks.
Enough to make me
wow, that was a
pause
out.
And
wow.
distract me and
I didn't
and
know
disgust.
We were airing it. I didn't know we were airing out the laundry.
As
in here.
I was calling you an extraordinaire.
Mm. Well, I mean, you know, that's
gas extraordinaire, is that?
Well, I'm that too. I mean,
Whoa.
I got hey.
You hear
if
that?
You want me
Did
to blow it out of the other end,
that's
I will, but I don't think that's gonna work out too
Did
well
you,
for anybody in this room.
I hear the bus and she just backed over him.
Anyway, that was Darnell Mooney. That was his lone touchdown catch. But
that's an interesting play.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That's an interesting play, Tiff. He's. Remember when he signed here, and everybody goes, why are you? Well, this guy's on a two. This guy's only had one good year in his career. And I remember.
Can you slow down with the term everybody?
Hold on,
okay,
everybody.
I hate when you do
everybody.
This.
I heard people. I heard people.
You heard like four of a million.
Twitter.
Well,
okay.
I heard loud voices, and there weren't just people on Twitter. They were people in the media. They were people on this radio station questioning that signing. And
who was that Georgia player? I forgot. Remind me of his name again. That talked about how everyone counted them out the whole season.
N'Kobe Dean.
Thank you, N'Kobe.
Day,
and 7-5.
Then admitted that nobody.
Yeah.
was saying it.
But I heard people say this about Darnell. I'll pull tape. I have to. But I remember saying, yeah. He also hasn't had the most efficient passing quarterbacks that have been throwing him the ball.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And he's a yak guy. But that play, I want to talk about that play real quick because it's fourth and one, and McCarthy runs down and calls timeout. And I think Arch pointed out in the broadcast that Zimmer didn't look like he was overly excited, the defensive coordinator, about McCarthy calling it timeout and come out of the play. And they have a bunch look over there, Mike. Three receivers over there. And it kind of turned into what a pick play would be, but there was nothing you could call on that because the Cowboys ran in.
It was a natural rub.
They created the contact because Trayvon Diggs couldn't fight through the bunch look, and Darnell is just wide open. And to me, that's one of the hardest. I looked at Arch and said, I think that's one of the hardest throws for a quarterback because it's so wide open.
Right.
Only you can screw it up with your throw.
Yeah. I love the play design. Obviously, you're in that 4th-and-1 situation, so the line of scrimmage is crowded. I think they were probably in a cover zero kind of all-out look up front. I have to go back and look at who bailed kind of up front. But you get the bunch look to the right. Darnell Mooney's the slot receiver on the inside. He outside releases, runs the wheel, and both those other guys running verticals, and you get the natural rub. So I will say this, too, watching from where I was at that point in the press box, I don't think that I've seen Kirk Cousins celebrate that hard all season. And I'm talking about game-winning plays, game-winning throws. He's had a couple of those this year. But when you saw what he felt about that play design, that execution, everything that went into it, he straight up goes like Tiger Woods, like Lane Kiffin, just barrel-fisting towards the sideline. He was so excited about that. So huge momentum shifter in the game. And to me, that was Raheem Morris, Zach Robinson, Kirk Cousins saying, Nah, we're ready for this, man. We're ready to step up in these situations. It was beautifully executed, to say the least.
And it was after what could have been deflating for the team. He had Drake London, who had the first touchdown score for the Falcons on a pass from, obviously, Kirk Cousins. But then he goes out and leaves the game with a hip injury. But I believe, I think it was at halftime, or I'm not sure if Raheem did a first quarter interview with Fox, with Pam Oliver, but he said something about, you're missing Drake London, but that they got the guys that can step up, and clearly they didn't really seem to skip a beat after that.
Yeah, it's a good point. It was probably the halftime, because that's when he was officially ruled out from my vantage point, was at the half tiff, and they did it. Kadarrell Hodge came in and played a significant time. Kyle Pitts didn't have a huge day from what he's been having.
Sure.
He had Ray McLeod.
Yeah. It was important. Like he did his job. Ray, to your point, Tiff, had the big touchdown catch. And Ray McLeod
his stat line was a perfect Ray McLeod stat line, in my opinion. It was like three catches for what, 30 or 40 yards? Huge catches, like huge momentum shifting catches. Like, I feel like that's what he's been in.
Three for 28 and a touchdown.
That's a Ray McLeod stat line, right? It's beautiful, and I'm sure he's fine with it.
And Bijan had another 7 catches. The Cowboys decided on offense that they were just going to run screens. Art said it at the top of the game. His Mercedes Benz keys of the game was limit the yak for Dallas. And there's so much focus on Matthew Judon and the sacks that he has and hasn't gotten this year. And they run a screen in the third quarter, Mike, and they try to set up a screen. And they got to Jake Ferguson, and there are two Falcons on the right side of the field. Two Falcons are there. And they have this thing set up perfectly, and Judon just gets his hand in there and bats that ball and just kind of makes the throw inaccurate. And that got him off the field.
Hit his red sleeve on the ball.
That's a touchdown.
I know.
This game could have been different. So the stat lines are not always accurate when you talk about big plays.
Well, another L in the column for the Cowboys is accurate. And they lost in more ways than one, with quarterback Dak Prescott having to leave this game. He suffered a hamstring injury during it. He's supposed to undergo an MRI today, but there are also shots of his hand that appeared to be really swollen. I believe it was his right hand, his throwing hand, that appeared to be pretty significantly swollen. I think maybe some bleeding, I think, if I recall, when I was seeing the zoom in of that hand. So, and then you had CeeDee Lamb battling through what appeared to be a shoulder injury during that game, trying to stay in. And do what he can to will the team to win. So,
yeah, AC joint, I believe, for CeeDee Lamb, and a number of things. Obviously, with Dak, it is interesting too. And Bo and I talked about this morning. Cooper Rush ends up with more throws than Dak Prescott.
Good.
More attempts on the day than Dak Prescott actually did, which is kind of crazy, but shows you kind of, I think it's been said a number of times, 27-21 is not indicative of kind of what this game looked like, right? You're backing off. You're trying to get them to chew up clock in the fourth quarter. Cooper Rush is in. He's kind of playing in desperation mode. So they also had a fumble that bounced right back into Cooper Rush's hands that he picks up the first down on. So
his
a lot of
craziness. Didn't do him any favors. A couple drop passes for them as they tried to work their way back into the game. But
yeah.
CeeDee Lamb, though, still being able to pull off a touchdown catch late in the game despite dealing with that shoulder injury.
He played with it almost the entire.
Yeah.
He had to be
shout out
pulled
to
off
game.
And then fought to go back in.
He's like, I'm going to make my money. I'm going to make my money.
We saw when he went down originally, and it was in the first half, and he got up, and he could tell that he was clutching his shoulder a little bit, and then he played the entire game. He was off that most of that drive where they ended up scoring the touchdown to get it within six, and he came in late, came back in, but This game reminded me of and I know it's going the way back, but we haven't had an offense to me this good in since Matt Ryan's days, and it reminded me of a 2016 game where you scored, you got up two scores, you took care of your opportunities, but then because you're up big late in the fourth quarter, you go in a softer shell than they normally play type defense where you just want them to make short underneath catches and burn clock. And it's exactly what Dallas did. And you get and basically they went, their drive might have been like 4 or 5 minutes that they scored the touchdown. You get the onside kick. But then the game does look closer than it really is. But the reality is you were in control. I just want this team to whether it's it's a learned thing, it's a mentality, whatever it is, but I want this team to put others away. And it's 2 weeks in a row, you had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter.
And then you're sweating it out.
Yeah, you didn't put it away. And I'm not going to sit here and lie to anybody. I remember 2020 where you're up huge on Dallas and then you need an onside kick.
Right.
To win, and you don't get it because you watch the ball roll around on the field and you don't cover it. So when they score, they get the 2-point, and they line up for that onside kick, and now the new rule is you got to declare. I was like, my stomach was in my throat.
Same. And shout out to Kyle Pitts for stepping up into traffic. That's a physical moment that, you know, he's not going to get a ton of credit for, obviously, on the stat card. But Kyle Pitts stepping up in that moment, even crossing that 10-yard marker, and he's able to get it done.
Yeah, don't wait for it. You don't have to.
He didn't. He definitely stepped up into traffic and got that done. I do want to go back to one thing, too, and Tiff brought up Dak's hand being swollen. I was shocked after the game to not see A.J. Terrell on the injury list after that strange kind of play where he looked like he tried to punch a ball out on maybe a cross route. I don't remember who it was, but he hits his hands off the receiver's helmet and then kind of clutches his hand. And it's not even able to make the tackle. And the receiver kind of falls down after their contact. But I thought AJ, I was like, oh no. Like he definitely punched at that and hit off the helmet. Had probably, I'm sure, some swelling, but I didn't see him on the postgame injury report, which was, I was holding my breath for. That was good news.
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, you hit a bump and it was worse. You thought it was worse than it was and you came out. It's weird because when the Dak thing happened, we saw what you saw. And I looked down, and I was looking down, and they were messing with his hand. And then I get the injury update that I get from Bass, and he goes, Dak out, hamstring.
Well, they did go back and show.
Yeah.
They showed it. When he pulled up.
But it was like, what? I didn't see that. I saw the throw, but you didn't see the – it looks like it almost kind of – you say pulled up, but it looked like a pop, you know, and that's what worries me for Dak.
The hand, they were touching on his right pinky area. That's what the athletic trainer was pushing down on. So perhaps we'll have some more news on the injury front for Dak today as he undergoes the MRI, though, for the hamstring injury. When we come back here on the morning shift, we will get to the latest in college football. I know you were probably sweating it out, and a lot of Georgia fans were. You were trying to pull for that big win. for your Gators. I was watching that one in flight, and I'll let you know what it was like to see one of the top rushing football teams in college football on my trip to West Point. That and more when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Back. Rolling along here on the Morning Shift, giving you the latest now on college football headlines and recapping the weekend that was. Let's get you, though, the Week 11 AP Top 25. I'll just rattle off the top 10 here. Oregon's at 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3, Miami 4, Texas 5, Penn State 6, Tennessee at 7, Indiana at 8, and BYU at 9, Notre Dame at 10 in your top 25.
I think the most eye-opening to me that one is that Indiana seems like they're finally getting a little respect.
I wonder if I was reading the right thing.
Yeah, they honestly have deserved more respect than they've gotten. It's pretty astounding what Kurt Cignetti has been able to do up there in a short amount of time. I mean, everybody remembers the press conference saying, Google me, all I do is win. But 37-point victory over Michigan State this past weekend, and that's a team that's off to the races at 9-0. So they finally make their way inside the top 10. I think it's well overdue.
Yeah, they got their quarterback back as well after the surgery earlier than anybody thought he'd be back. The Texas A&M loss to me, now I look at the SEC and I'm like, has anybody gonna make it to this conference with one loss?
I don't think so.
And by the way, Texas A&M lost to South Carolina 44-20.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's the correct the proper way to say it.
I mean 44-20.
We might have said it the wrong way.
It goes without.
They got drummed.
Yeah. It goes without saying.
I mean,
brutal.
I get so. You always hear about coaches on the hot seat, and it feels like college football is worse than it's ever been with the way money is going in the sport. Shane Beamer ain't going nowhere.
Dude.
To me,
he always seems to come up with. There's some sort of big win.
That's what you have to do with South Carolina, too.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
To me, South Carolina's sweet spot is 9-4, you know, every year. Maybe every once in a while you pop up with an 11-2 or 10-3 and just, out of, you know.
Hit the double digits every now and then.
Because you want these big wins, these upsets, you know, win at home. Like, you just got to have a good atmosphere. I love Shane Beamer personally.
Yeah. I thought it was exciting to see that. Texas A&M, honestly, on the opposite side of that, we've talked about how up and down their quarterback play has been, and obviously it stayed that way through this game. They had the driver's seat in the SEC. Now we kind of have to recalibrate everything we think about coming to Atlanta. We had that conversation multiple times last week, and I don't know, man. Like, there's so many scenarios out there, I can't even see straight. I have no idea. So.
You really almost had to recalibrate after the Georgia-Florida game. I was watching this after leaving my game from my phone onto the aircraft and then watching it in flight because I couldn't believe what I was seeing at first because Florida, I believe, led it going into half, didn't they? Wasn't like 13-something or whatever it was before?
They had a 13-6 lead, if I'm not mistaken.
So, of course, yeah. Georgia ends up winning 34-20, but Florida had them for a bit. Yeah.
It wasn't dominant in way, shape, or form. Now, Georgia did start. Georgia roars back, takes a 2013 lead, and then here came Florida. And
they made mistakes that kind of shot themselves in the foot.
I texted Bo when Lagway is getting carted off, and I'm like, dude, just makes my stomach hurt for Florida and their fans, and obviously that whole program down there, because you already have had one injury to Graham Mertz and Lagway just stepping up. And you're like, man, this dude's good. And then it's like, oh, dang.
But they still had a chance.
Yeah, they definitely did.
You know,
give Billy Napier. Give the defensive coordinator credit. They have fixed a defense that was just absolutely horrific. In fact, I called it the worst Florida defense I've ever seen the first 4 weeks of the season. And now they have shut down the Tennessee offense. I mean, to me, they shut down Georgia for the most part. That one of those, I think there was a pick six in that game as well. So Carson Beck struggled again, but I think Carson Beck struggles. Our teams are playing him differently. They've kind of figured what they want to do. The defense has figured out how to play this offense because it's very one-dimensional at times. And I think he plays a little bit of hero ball. You don't need to force the ball in all the time. That was not a bad performance by Florida. To me, if you're a Georgia fan, I'd be saying, why did we only beat a Florida team we should have handled by 14?
Yeah, but no, I agree with you all the way around. I think it shows how good Georgia is that they can pull away when they're not playing their best. Nate Frazier, a decent game. Offensive line showed some ups and downs, but, you know, in the end, doing enough up front to get it done. But I think it says a lot about Kirby Smart's team that, look, was it 53-3 now in your last 56? And I think all three losses to Alabama, obviously the one before that coming to Florida. But I also think, to your point, says something about Billy Napier that his teams are playing hard. His teams are playing hard. And I think that is a lot about leadership. In this day and age, when guys can just freely walk out into the transfer portal, there is a lot to be said about teams that are playing hard this time of year.
So I was up at West Point to see Army and Air Force battle it out. Army was the 21st-ranked team going into this after the win, I believe, if I had the poll right there, 18th. Now in the AP poll. This was a game where, and Bo will have to man up when we get to that segment in an hour or so, where at the last minute we're, you know, getting information that their starting quarterback, Bryson Daly, who has powered their run game, is not going to be playing. And there was a kind of an undisclosed illness is what we were told and what they had put out. So we saw their backup quarterback, Dwayne Coleman, go in. And it wasn't the same Army offense at first. They had just 50 rushing yards at half. And this is the team that averaged well over 350 rushing yards a game. So it was quite jarring to see. But in talking with Coach Munkin at the half, he told me we need to do a better job of running the ball up the interior. That ended up being what happened later in the game, and they were able to kind of take advantage of the fact that one of the star linemen, Peyton Sedgwick for Air Force went down with an injury and did not return. So that was really tough news for them. But they were able to take it to them behind running back Kanye Udo. So it was
What did he say again? We got to run the ball up the middle.
We got to do a better job of running the ball up the interior.
Makes me feel a certain way. That gives me the warm fuzzies right there.
That is what they did. But it was just, beside from that, quickly, just the you all talked about the pageantry and everything going up there. You had, the parachute, the guys jumping out of the planes, landing perfectly onto the field. You had the flyover and just being in there. I actually got to talk with the Secretary of the Army. So that was really cool, an in-game interview. But anyway.
It's a whole experience.
It's a whole experience, yes.
That's really cool. I'm glad you got to do a game there.
The fall leaves.
Oh, I bet it's beautiful up there. Yeah, a buddy of mine hit me up and said, hey, any games you think I should take this weekend?
No.
And I said, he said, what do you think about the Army game? I said, yeah, man. I said, absolutely. I read all my stats. And then he goes, hips it back. He goes, hey, I heard their starting quarterback's out. And this was literally like 11:45. I go,
yikes.
I go, really?
Uh-oh.
I said, yeah. Then he asked me about the Auburn game, and I said, yeah, take Vandy. If Pavia is playing, you take Vandy.
You got to.
10-point win.
You got to. I can't let this segment go by before we say something about Ohio State, their big win over Penn State.
Yes.
I think that's a huge one to point to. And we went back and forth, and we both picked this game on Friday, Tiff. And I said to myself, and Sandy kind of, we were talking out of the bullpen, and I said, I have to go with, what am I going to be more mad at Monday if I come in and I was wrong? And Penn State just never seems to get over this hump.
They don't
ever seem to get over this hump. And I go, you know what, if I were to pick Penn State and I came in Monday and I was wrong, I'd be like, dude, what were you thinking? All right, so I mentioned it, we'll do that man up coming up in just over an hour, Tip, but went with Ohio State. They were able to get
it. Ohio State won 20-13. Army stays undefeated, by the way. They won that game 20-3 against
there's a crazy stat, Tiff, that James Franklin is like 1-10, I think, against Ohio State. The last time he won was 2015.
They showed some interaction between him and a fan after the game, and the fan, I couldn't hear what the fan was saying, but James Franklin asked the guy, "What's your name?" He's like, "You know, basically, we're going to say stuff. Basically, put your name on it."
Well, I agree with that.
I respect that. Him and Jason Kelce, I respect that.
But also, James Franklin probably doesn't need to be barking at fans when he can't deliver.
You don't have to be disrespectful because you lose a football game. And
I don't disagree. I don't disagree, but maybe don't jaw with fans. But you just
don't open your mouth if you're a fan.
Or beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
Maybe beat Ohio State.
Be the head coach of Penn State if you want
to
run your mouth.
But your job as a head coach of Penn State is to win football games.
Well,
and when
your
you
job
lose
to
the same team
the
every
team
year,
and you keep your mouth shut. Otherwise.
You know that's I don't agree with fans talking out of line, but.
Sounds like you do.
Maybe James Franklin should coach more than he talks. He likes to yap unless there's a real important question to ask.
This hour is brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. When we come back, we'll get you back to your Falcons and that win over the Cowboys next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 7 o'clock hour of the Morning Shift. It is brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting clean, the Atlanta Falcons roll on with another victory, beating the Cowboys 27-21 on Sunday.
Yeah, big win. Yeah. Look, this is two in a row.
All right, let's start it off.
I mean, like two in a row. So now you're 6-1 in the conference. I don't think that can be understated, because let's just say if Tampa Bay loses tonight to Kansas City.
Fingers crossed.
You essentially have a 3-game lead in the division, because you're up 2 full games and you have the head-to-head tiebreaker with them. So essentially, you have a 3-game lead in the division, which is huge. You could go to New Orleans, win your third straight, move to 7-1 in the conference if you can take care of business, and you're going to be 7-3. Now things are looking pretty good. You're 6-3 for the first time since, I believe, 2016. I had to double check that, but I think that's the number. And you didn't allow a team to come into your trap with their backs against the wall.
Don't.
Yes.
It's 7 o'clock.
And beat you like you did against Seattle.
Don't do this.
Into the trap. Take over the trap.
Don't do this.
No, you know what I want to point out real quick, too, is...
You didn't know I was going there, did you?
No, it hurt my soul.
I did. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Walk into your trap, take over your trap.
That's right, Kirk. That's right. They weren't able to do that. Dallas and those guys weren't able to do that. We need to talk more about Dallas's coaching, some of the decisions we saw, the fact that you got 12 men on a fourth down, 10 men on a third down, a lot of that stuff. But I do want to talk a little bit about the pass rush getting home, and we mentioned it, 3 sacks yesterday, 2 of those on back-to-back plays by Grady and Arnold Ebiketie, and what was different. And I think we talked about it a little bit on postgame, Goforth and I. We have talked on this show about the inability, it seems like, to get penetration on the twist games, right? We run a lot of stunts up front, a lot of TEs, ETs, linebackers doing different things. These guys have not been able to get penetration. The first guy through is not able to get penetration and get the offensive lineman on the twist games on 2 different levels. And yesterday, especially on those 2 sacks, but honestly numerous times throughout the first half and the whole game, you did a great job as the first man through getting the offensive lineman on second level, not allowing those guys to kind of bump hips and pass you off. And when you're able to do that, right, when the first guy gets penetration, you end up with 2 options in the backfield. So Grady Jarrett gets penetration, then you have a looper coming around that obviously can get home as well, and either one of those guys can get the sack. And that's exactly what happened yesterday numerous times. You flushed Dak. Dak ended up with 30 rushing yards, which surpassed his season total. But I think I can live with that based on your ability to kind of get those offensive linemen on second levels.
Well, let's talk about the other quarterback in this game, Kirk Cousins. 222 total yards and 3 touchdowns, capping off a 144.8 passer rating this season. Just incredible what he has been able to put together here with the Falcons. And he joined Dave Archer, analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, for postgame. And this interview is brought to you by Margaritaville at Lake Lanier Islands, an easy 1-hour drive from Atlanta.
Kirk, for me, watching the game, it just looked like a workmanlike performance. You went out, and you and I were talking just before you came on. There was some things probably, and maybe in every game, but there were some things left out there. But just a solid performance on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, there was a solid nature to the game. It was workmanlike. I went in at halftime, and I said, this feels like a game we have to grind out and just one play at a time earn our way. Was pleased with, you know, much of what we did today, but would have loved to pull away late more than we did.
The evolution of both the pass game and the run game and the way they are blending with one another, you like the direction that's going?
I do. I thought our run game was really positive today. I think the challenge is any negative runs that kind of set us back. If we can avoid those negative runs and just kind of stay in positive gains, it would really help. You know, Dallas made us earn it, and you know, it was like you said, workmanlike. That's kind of how it felt.
Did they show something or try to maybe change their stripes a little bit? A lot of aggressiveness, a lot of tight coverage, trying to make your guys win.
Yeah, it definitely was tight coverage, and they challenged us in that aspect. Last week against San Francisco, they played some previously unscouted looks, and then I think they did that a little bit again today. I told Coach Zimmer after the game, I just thought he did a nice job of kind of keeping us on our toes and having to keep seeing what they were doing, because it wasn't an easy look plug and play each time. It was kind of a constant changeup.
If there is such a thing, kind of in the dog days of the season now, mid season now, trying to keep your stride or maybe extend your stride, what's your message to the guy that's been around this game for a while and been in these situations before? Now you got a divisional game coming up next week.
Yeah, I think mature football teams just find a way to keep standing up, keep coming back, keep stacking strong performances. They don't ride the roller coaster. You know, we got to, learn from this game and just come back ready to go on the road against a team that's ascending. And so, will be a good challenge for us.
All right, last thing for you. Our Solomon Brothers player of the game was Darnell Mooney today. 5 catches, 88 yards and a touchdown. And Darnell's made a bunch of plays for you already this year. What is it about him that you like so much about getting him the ball?
Yeah, he's got great movement skills. He's a total pro, as professional of a receiver as I've been around.
Wow.
Just handles himself really well. He's very aware, and he's really good movement skills. He's a tough cover.
All right, man. 6-3, good win.
Yep, keep building.
So, Kirk last year through 8 games before the injury was completing 69.5% of his passes. He had thrown for 2,331 yards, 18 touchdowns, 5 picks. Through 9 games with the Atlanta Falcons, And some of you might say throw one of those games out because we don't even I don't even recognize.
Yeah, that'd be me. I'd say that. Throw it out. I think he said that, actually.
He also said the Saints were ascending, so I don't know if I agree with everything Kirk says. But,
don't
you know,
disparage an opponent.
I agree with him. Through 9 games this year with the Falcons, he's completing 69.2% of his passes for 2,328 yards with 17 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. So when people said, what are you getting coming off an injury? Did you overpay? Yada, yada, yada. I think that they're getting what they paid for, because Kirk Cousins has been phenomenal. The last 2 games, he's thrown 7 touchdowns, 0 picks. Tiff, you said something like
144.8.
Yeah, through those two games. I mean, it's been phenomenal. And he's got guys like Darnell Mooney. And Darnell Mooney has been worth every penny, too. And don't forget, that's a guy that Kirk watched, Mike,
right,
in Chicago when he was with Minnesota, and he said, go get him. I want him.
Right, and here's what else I'll remind you of. Who would you have rather had yesterday at the quarterback position, Kirk Cousins or Dak? I think the answer for me is easily Kirk Cousins. And you talk about money, and everybody's like, well, you went out and spent big money on the quarterback position. Guess what? Dallas did too, and right now, Dak doesn't look that much more agile or athletic than anything Kirk Cousins is doing. I was frustrated at the fact that I think he had like a 22-yard rush at one point. We mentioned last week he had only had 20 yards rushing on the season going into this weekend's game after having about 240 last year. He just hasn't tried to run. I don't know if that's a coaching decision coming all the way from Jerry or whatever it is. He reels off the big run yesterday. I'm like, man, I knew that was coming at some point just because it seems like we can't always get home and get guys on the ground in the backfield. But Dak even throwing it downfield, CeeDee Lamb and him couldn't get things going. I just thought that our secondary really played a nice game yesterday, and that's a hat tip to Jimmy Lake and Raheem.
Yeah, you think so? Well, what if I told you that CeeDee Lamb was targeted 13 times yesterday.
Monday night. How many? ESPN. If I told you?
Let's do it this way. If Friday morning I said, hey, we're going to sit here on Monday and say that, and I'm going to tell you that CeeDee Lamb was targeted 13 times, what do you think his numbers would look like?
Yeah, a lot better than they were.
Yeah, you're saying that he would do better than 8 catches for 47 yards without a touchdown?
You would think. Now, that's taking the Dak injury, the CeeDee Lamb injury, and everything else out of it.
But I also give credit to, because I want to make sure we are talking about it enough, because this is was the dominant conversation, if I can get my words together, last week going into this game, which was the Falcons' pass rush. So give some credit to those guys who had 3 sacks and were able to put in some pressure.
Yeah, and it was the second drive that they got after it immediately, and they completely kind of changed. Caden Ellis was a huge part of the game yesterday for the Falcons. Him and Arnold Ebiketie, to me, had their best games of the season. I saw great stuff from those guys.
Yeah, and let's not forget, was it Nate Lehman on the fourth down, CeeDee Lamb speed sweep?
No, it was Caden.
Was it Caden that jumps through, grabs the collar, and able to bring him down? I thought that was a massive play, and you talk about it. I said we were going to talk about Mike McCarthy. He slams the iPad down at one point in the game yesterday. They're trying to go for it on a fourth down. They have too many men in the huddle. Yeah. The other time on a third and four, I think Dan Orlovsky is talking about it on social right now. They have 10 men on the field for a big third and four swing pass to Bijan on a screen. This just was – it was a comedy of errors at points for Dallas, and I think that – I don't want to spend too much time focusing on Mike McCarthy because I don't know how much longer he'll last in Dallas. But I think on the flip side, it's a good time to kind of talk about Raheem Morris and how situationally we've been elite, it feels like, at times. Because, look, you're back-to-back weeks now against a fake punt that you were ready for.
And you scored touchdowns after those.
Right, you shut those down. There's so many things that I feel like situationally we don't give Raheem Morris enough credit for in terms of these – look, we've had 2 times we've won, obviously, against Philadelphia and then against Tampa late in the game where your clock management has been elite clock management by Raheem Morris. So if there's any more questions about him, then you want to look at Dallas and say, well, Mike McCarthy's not it. Make sure you are also crowning Raheem Morris and what he's been through the first half of this season.
Boom. When we come back here on the morning shift, the latest NFL headlines. And we've got Monday Night Football tonight, too, guys. So we'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are going in the huddle, give you the latest NFL headlines, and we can start with an NFC South division foe in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have Monday Night Football tonight against the Kansas City Chiefs. But with the Falcons win over the Cowboys, I think they've taken 4 out of their last, or 5 out of the last 6 games, I believe.
Yeah, they're 5-1. 5-1 their last 6.
And that includes a win.
Two
wins over the Buccaneers.
Yeah,
so they're sitting in the driver's seat in the NFC South. But, again, it's the Bucs and the Chiefs tonight on Monday Night Football.
And it's big. I said it earlier, and I don't think it can be understated that you won't – you're always pulling for Tampa Bay and New Orleans and the Panthers to lose unless they're playing each other. And then you pull for the Panthers to beat either one of those two teams because they actually have been decent in the last few years. But if – Tampa loses tonight, they're 4-5, and you're 6-3, and you essentially have a 3-game lead in the division.
Let's go.
Because you have 2 full games,
let's go,
record-wise, and then you own a 2-0 record, which is a tiebreaker, which is essentially, to me, stands for as like a third game.
Yeah, the number tonight is 9 for the Chiefs. It seems a little bit stout, but I think that shows you how much everybody kind of expects the Bucs to struggle without their 2 top wide receivers. And, we'll see if they can get it done. But, Kansas City, pretty good football team. I don't know if anybody's said anything about that lately, but, yeah, pretty good.
I would co-sign on that. The Raiders, things just keep not going well for them. They have made a move now and fired their offensive coordinator, Luke Getsy, after just 9 games. So they now fall to 2-7 on the season. Why are you chuckling?
Because they send it. Well, 2 reasons. One, they send a tweet out that says, we have relieved Luke Getsy and 2 other assistant coaches, which is funny because I think that's probably what those guys are feeling right now, knowing that their contracts we pay, they don't have to deal with the Gardner Minshew Desmond Ridder train. And if I'm not mistaken, did Desmond Ridder throw a touchdown pass yesterday to Brock Bowers?
I don't know. I didn't catch that. Did he do that?
I want to.
He came in. I'm looking at the box score right
Somehow
now.
I missed that one on the post game.
I am almost positive that happened because I was standing
there.
Yeah,
he did come into the game.
Awesome.
So he did come into the
game.
And
he did throw a touchdown pass to Brock Bowers.
He was benched for Ritter. Gardner Minshew was benched for Ritter in this game.
It cracks you up. And it cracks you up that the OC was the one like, oh, Joe Burrow throws for 5 touchdown passes yesterday. And it's like they have no answer defensively. But you can't clean house on that side because it's kind of Antonio Pierce's bread and butter. It's dysfunctional, man, to say the least.
One of the things I saw come out, did you want to complete a thought on this?
No, go ahead.
One of the things I saw come out in the aftermath is it was Albert Breer who was just tweeting about how the OC who's in D.C., right? Kingsbury?
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Kingsbury. I wanted to butcher his name, Cliff Kingsbury. The Raiders were in talks with him, and it's not to say that things would have changed, but the hang-up on getting him there was, I believe, on a third year he was trying to get on a contract, and it didn't work out. Not saying he'd have the same success there that he's having in D.C.
No.
But
they're dealing with no quarterback right now.
It's important because it is in some ways changed not one but two franchises, because I can't necessarily sit here and tell you that Jaden Daniels is having maybe the same success. I think Jaden Daniels is going to be a good player, but I think Cliff Kingsbury is the perfect OC for him. And I think that's – if he doesn't get credit, that's not fair considering all the credit we gave your boy in Houston with C.J. Stroud.
Bobby Slowick. And here's the thing, too. If I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I've already been an NFL head coach. I am clinging on to Dan Quinn as if my life depended on it for the rest of my coaching career, because I think that they fit so well together in the way they're able to. I'm not saying that they're going to go win Super Bowls together and all that, but I just think – as long as Dan Quinn is a head coach or even a DC in the NFL, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I am sticking so close to Dan Quinn and where he's at, because you just look. It's like, man, yeah, don't need to be a head coach. Been there, done that. Maybe you feel like you have something to prove, but he's doing so well with what Jaden Daniels is right now, and I think that offense just kind of mirrors Cliff Kingsbury and what he brings to the table.
I'll get you some injury updates before we move on. We have talked about on this show Dak Prescott. He's having an MRI today on a hamstring injury that he sustained during their loss to the Falcons, possibly also dealing with the ham injury as well. We've not gotten the latest update on that. And then when you look at the Saints, their star receiver, Chris Olave, because they're next up for the Falcons, he was carted off after taking a hit to the head in the first quarter of their game against the Panthers. So that's a significant blow to a Saints squad that has been on the downtrend.
Yeah, Tiff, we're unfortunately, because I'm a big Chris Olave fan, and I know that, you know, look, he plays for the Saints, whatever, but he's a good player. He's been a good player. We're starting to get into dangerous territory for him. I mean, we're starting to inch towards Tua Tagovailoa stuff. I mean, he just came back from a nasty head injury. And this one, you know, he's kind of motionless on the turf for a little bit, and you get the update that he's got feeling in his extremities. But man, that's we're getting into a range with him that's getting to be kind of scary.
Well, the history is he had one in 2020 at Ohio State. He had one in 2022 in the NFL. He had one in 2023 in the NFL. These are just ones that he's been documented and medically met with doctors. October 13th, he had the concussion against the Bucks. The 27th, he was evaluated for a concussion, and then yesterday he was taken to the hospital for a concussion. You're absolutely right. It is getting to be scary territory, and to me, it might be even scarier because he's a guy that is in a more – I'm not taking anything away from a guy standing in the pocket and taking hits, but this guy's coming across the middle taking hits, right?
Yeah. Right.
A little bit more physically demanding.
Can't really protect him from that.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but I had multiple games on yesterday. Saquon Barkley – with the acrobatics. Did you guys see the play where he hurdles over backward, like a backwards hurdle?
Very Olympian type stuff.
Yes. He's been rejuvenated.
I'm not going to lie to y'all. When I saw it and I was in slow motion, I was like, that helmet is really close to the danger zone.
That
helmet gets about, I don't know, 3 inches higher. He's in a bad way right now.
Sometimes just getting clipped is worse than getting a full brunt of it. I mean, you know what I mean?
You did not just say no, you did not just
Yeah,
say
not
that.
A glancing blow.
Yeah. Clip can hurt.
Yeah, I agree.
I know you did not just say that. Anyway, the Eagles beat the Jags 28-23, but the season Saquon's having now, if you're in New York, I'm sorry. They
knew it was coming,
they knew
too. I mentioned this yesterday, Tiff, and I'm glad you brought this up. I mentioned this on the postgame show because anybody that watched the spring edition of Hard Knocks, Brian Daboll asking Jaden Daniels if he wanted to be the starting quarterback for the New York Giants. And these teams faced off yesterday. Jaden Daniels goes off, has a great day. And you look at the all-encompassing parts of that entire ordeal and basically, you know, the owner coming in and saying, you know, Saquon's our most popular player. I hope he doesn't go to the Eagles. Well, turns out he did, and he's having a great year right now. He's one of the top guys, top three, I believe, in all-purpose yards in the NFL. He's been spectacular.
He has been, and there's still time, right, before the NFL trade deadline, which is November 5th. So there's lots of
tomorrow,
of rumors.
4 o'clock,
and,
I think,
you
right?
Know? Yeah, that would be, yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's interesting. You'll know the kind of the fate of your team as far as what you're going to have, and other than, you know, just kind of some guys that are off the street or practice squads and stuff. If there's another, if there's a bigger, big time player coming over, you know what it's going to be tomorrow.
Za'Darius Smith from the Browns been one of the names that's popped up. I saw the reports of that yesterday, and obviously Ojulari from the Giants is a name that keeps getting kicked around in Atlanta Falcons circles. I'm probably a little bit more hesitant than most people because I think when you look at it, you've already given up next year's third for Matthew Judon. It's like, how much of those future picks do you want to get rid of? But it is what it is at this point, man. You need some help and something to rejuvenate, and hopefully they can try to find something, whether it just be somebody on the roster right now or somebody they can bring in.
Well, I think somebody proposed that the guy that had proposed a D'Angelo Malone trade has taken him off the board now because he's came
right.
in.
He was getting some action yesterday.
So guy told me that we could trade Elijah Wilkinson and a 7 for
you said a guy told you this?
Yeah,
on-
yeah. And apparently that'll get us Myles Garrett. So let's do that.
I do want to say Washington reportedly has been kind of, this is according to Jonathan Jones of CBS, kind of poked around to see who they could get in the receiver market to give Terry McLaurin some help as they make a playoff push. But I also want to, I heard this on listening to the TV yesterday. People are calling to try to inquire players or trying to figure out if they can get to Washington. Like times have changed significantly there where you had guys wanting to get the heck out of there with that franchise. And now you've got people trying to find out how they can become a part of that team.
Yeah, you got rid of a bad owner, and you got a good head coach who's a even better person.
He's more charismatic.
Who people want to be around and
good
play
dude.
For. I told a person on this show that Dallas Cowboys' biggest loss in the offseason was Dan Quinn, and someone didn't agree with me. And now I believe I've been proven right.
What? Oh, here we go. So we're just going to dig up stuff from 4 months ago and then act like we're
oh, does it make it any less accurate?
Bo Cephas
over
here.
Does it make it any less right, Michael?
Well, look, if we just go and dig up comments from 4 months ago, you can probably find 10 more that you were dead wrong on. So let's just pick and choose.
I don't recognize those. Only the ones I'm right on, sir.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. What you got for my
You told me D. Ritty was going to the Pro Bowl last year, too, at some point on this show. Let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, he could have been an alternate just as much as Huntley was that one year.
Hey, look, man, when we come back, we're going to talk more Falcons. I want to talk to you guys about who was the best player yesterday, not named Kirk Cousins or Bijan Robinson. We'll go deeper into the numbers on that. And then the tickets heard around the world last week. I made my appearance at the Atlanta United game. I'll take you all the way through the magical win that was. We'll hear some Mike Conte as well on those calls. Just a crazy night down at the Benz and yesterday at the Benz. So good weekend. We'll talk about that on Mic'd Up. Coming up next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Hodge, Mooney, and McLeod to the left. Snap to Cousins. Off the 11 after the loss of two. Kirk throws. Oh, my heavens! Wide open! Ray McLeod! Touchdown, Atlanta!
That was Wes Durham on the call, along with Dave Archer on the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. I did not give you a shout-out this time, but sorry about that.
It's all right. You also didn't call me out either.
I also did
which
not.
Is good.
Also did not call you.
It's appreciated sometimes.
Well. No, I mean, hey, we do what we can. But the Falcons go on to beat the Cowboys 27-21.
6-3, first place in the division, 6-1 in the conference. We should be ecstatic as Falcons fans right now because you've won 21 games in the last 3 years and you went 7-10 every stinking year. And now you're sitting at 6-3 through 9 games.
Mm.
You're 4-0 in the division with a rivalry game this week going to New Orleans against a team that's lost 7 straight They're going to be in a desperation mode. Now it's another game where there's a team where they're back against the wall, and you got to go into their trap, and you got to take over their trap. And so,
let me tell you something. That is a trap.
Take over your trap.
Speaking of which, there's going to be too many people looking at what their score was against Carolina, and they're going to say, oh, you know, we should go in. Dude, I'm just telling you, Alvin Kamara is an absolute dog on the ground right now. And I don't know if you noticed, but Rico Dowdle was not supposed to get what they did on the ground. You know, for Dallas, and they were able to run on us at will at times, it felt like. So
that was a weird run game for them yesterday, because they did it at times and got nothing, and then they got a couple of gash plays. Like Dowdle got a couple of, I think, 9 or 10 yard carries, and then you had a couple of Dak runs that kind of bloated that number.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up like that, because I asked you a minute ago going to break, and I wanted to get your guys' take on who was the best player not named Bijan or Kirk Cousins, because I think it was such a well-rounded victory, right? There's plenty of guys you could point to and say this guy was good or that guy was good. My thought was the offensive line played really well yesterday. I thought that, you know, the pocket was clean. You look at the touchdown we just came back with, the Ray McLeod. He's going through his options, Even the times they did get to him, I felt like coverage sack, or, you know, the one that was an incompletion that was almost a strip fumble. He's you know, kind of stepping up in the pocket and trying to get rid of it and just can't. So I thought they played extremely well yesterday at numerous times.
Yeah, I think you don't realize we haven't had the starting center for this team in 5 weeks now.
Crazy.
And Newsel has stepped in, and I think he's done a pretty good job, man. You've had Bergeron go down. Remember Chris Lindstrom went down against Tampa, did not come back in the game, played the entire game. In fact, yesterday, I don't know if you guys caught it on the TV, but we have our sound effects, and you hear an expletive screamed at the end of a play.
Yeah.
And it was maybe a guy who may or may not play right guard for the Atlanta Falcons. He was upset with himself on the play. And I'm not calling him out. I'm giving him love, because I absolutely love the competitiveness and the fire in a player who is upset because, you know, he didn't do his best on just one play. And he played well yesterday. The right tackle, who everyone wanted to kill all offseason that couldn't get the job done, has gotten the job done. I thought he played very well yesterday. Yeah. I thought Jake played well. They all played well.
Yeah, I think Caleb's having quietly one of his better seasons, and he might be one of the candidates for rising up tomorrow. But right now, let's hit him mic'd up. Really an awesome Saturday for me. Bama was off, so I didn't have to have that stress in my life. I headed up to Hamilton Mill and hung out with a bunch of good people up at Buffalo's Cafe. Shout out to Will, the leader of Mike's Mafia. Got a chance to meet him. Our buddy BJ, the Talladega ticket winner. And as well, another listener of the show. I just had such a good time up there. You know, got to look, man, mingle with some of the people out there that love listening to us every morning. I said, I'm sorry and thank you for listening. So good stop up there in Hamilton Mill, and shout out to everybody that was a part of that ordeal. Come home, wife and I get dressed, babysitter shows up. We headed down to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Shout out to Tim Z for hooking us up. If you listened to the show last week, was on here and I was like, hey, you think Mike Conte can hook it up? And Bo's like, I know people too. And you know what? To your credit, you do know people, because when I tell you I sat in some of the best seats I've ever sat in at any sporting event yesterday up in that Gold Wing Club, got to go in there and hang out. So I want to make sure we get back through this game. First of all, it was cool just to see Lionel Messi on the field. I was not at the game last time he was playing. So seeing him on the field moving around, he had a couple of electric moments where he was on touch of the ball for the large part, kind of passive in the game, which led to the fact that the crowd was entirely amped up, and I want to make sure we play the sound from the first goal, because Mike Conte took note.
It's over the head of Ronald Hernandez and a roll into the near touchline and be kept in play by Fortune. Over to Amador now, who will pitch from the left wing to the back post. Header! Score! Place is worse than bonkers. Atlanta United finds the equalizer with a half hour to play.
Definitely worse than bonkers at this point. So I'm sitting in the good seats I was able to have, and everybody in this look, we're not, you know, not in the supporter section. So everybody just, I mean, losing their minds, standing up around each other, high-fiving, going back and forth, chopping it up. At this point, I'm high-fiving service workers. There's like a sushi bar right behind me. He's like, let me get some of that sushi while I'm celebrating. Things were just losing their mind. I was like, dude, if I was out in the stands right now, I might be spraying beer all over the place. But nonetheless, a great time. And then, you know, you kind of settle into this United game, right? It's some back and forth. Messi has a moment. Miami hits the crossbar one. Guzan a couple of big saves. And then you settle in. You go, man, we might be headed for, you know, we might be headed for PKs. We might be headed for a little bit of extra juice here at the end because you're tied 1-1. And in the 90th minute, you have Jean de Silva come on, and this happens.
Rios gets up under it to head it forward. Now it's loose in the middle, and it rolls to Rios. Rios passing to Moyamba. Ahead to Jean de Silva, top of the arc. Shot! Score! 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 With 90 seconds to play! What a team goal!
Inject that into my veins.
Jean de Silva gets his first goal of the playoffs with a minute to play. Atlanta United could be on the verge of going back to Fort Lauderdale. Can you believe it?
Inject that into my veins. I've been to so many cool sporting events. I've played in championship games. I've been to national titles and played in them. I've been all over the place as far as sporting events go. I almost headbutted my wife right after that. I almost looked at her and headbutted her right there. I was so rowdy. Shout out to the guy that was sitting in front of me. I didn't catch his name. High fives me. We're losing our minds. And he turns around and goes, hey, big fan of the show. Love the show. I was like, awesome, man. So it was really cool to be in that moment, that atmosphere, and those particular seats, man. Shout out to Bo, Tim Z, and everybody else that made it happen. Cool date night on Saturday night for me and the wife to get out of the house. And an electric, electric victory for Atlanta United to be able to send it back to Fort Lauderdale, like Mike Conti just said.
I mean, if I had told you that you would be sitting here and that we'd be going back to Miami for a third and final game in the first round of the playoffs, Jeff, after you fired Gonzalo Pineda, what, in June?
Yeah, and your three best players from the beginning of the season are not here.
Yeah. So it's pretty wild ride, and this is not
testament to the coaching too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. This is not a regular MLS team. I mean, this is a team that has Messi, the greatest soccer player possibly of all time.
It's the greatest regular season MLS team of all time. I think that's was it 74 points they got in regular season? Just insane. And you're able to pull it off and get it done, man. So hats off to everybody associated with Atlanta United. They've made us proud.
We'll see if you'll still be riding high when we come back in our next segment. We have a man up Monday for these two. Stick with us here. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 99, The Game. This is The Morning Shift. We are in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. One of you guys should hit the road after the picks you made over the weekend. This is the man up segment. Someone's not going to be feeling too good after today.
No, well, I mean, let me tell you something. When I get my NASCAR driver in the Championship Four,
it was a great weekend in Atlanta sports.
When Atlanta United wins on Saturday to extend a playoff series, when the Falcons take care of business, hell, Chris Sale won a Gold Glove over the weekend. I mean, he won it during the season, but he got announced yesterday. He won that Gold Glove. Even being wrong about a couple of games that, you know, that ain't gonna hurt my feelings. And one of them I wasn't even really wrong about. I even said in my analysis, which we'll get to, that about a certain player that should have played. And for Larry in the truck wants to start tweeting at me. The Florida game wasn't. There was no debacle in Florida with UGA. Yeah. Florida went down there, a lesser team, and almost and went to bat with UGA, and they did it with a guy who was playing at Harvard.
Yeah.
Last year,
at
quarterback. So
I want to make sure that I take victory here too, because Bo just last segment talked about how good Caleb McGarry played. right? So I'm going to actually take that as a dub as well when I get Bo to talk about how good the Falcons' offensive line has been, man. We love talking about the rims and the paint job on the car, but rarely can I get Bo to talk about the engine of the car. So I'm going to take that as a dub here as well. So I'm feeling good about that.
Also,
good vibes on Monday.
That girl on Twitter, who is a big Vanderbilt fan, just said, guess who? She said, guess who owns the state of Alabama? And a hint, not Tuscaloosa.
Vilt.
So,
hey, hats off to him, man. I told, dude, that's a good program right now, back in the top 25. Love to see it.
Yeah, so, you know what? No further ado, Mike.
Yeah.
You need to man up.
I will.
Before we get started, Mike, and before you and I man up.
Here we go.
Dylan needs to man up.
Oh, don't do that.
Because
that,
Dylan, for 2 weeks in a row, has not done the one thing I've asked him to do.
And that's put my voice on up. That intro. That's okay, though.
It'll happen.
Doesn't need to be on there, man.
It does need to. Bo is absolutely right. It does need to be on there because that's fair. Mike has been plenty wrong during this segment as well.
Okay.
So it does need to be on there.
He
so,
has to.
Bo, before y'all man up, I will man up and say I'll send that email to Steve today, pronto.
All right. Like your haircut.
Thank you.
Well, you got a new haircut. If you can't see it.
I do know. Your radio. Does look good. Looks good, Dylan. That's all. And I came in.
Thank you, Tiff.
You're welcome.
All right, where do we want to start, Michael?
Well, I think we should probably start with the good for both of us because that's the vibes I'm getting. I'll go first if you don't mind. I stepped in. I said basically, this Falcons defense, Bo, it's too good. It's too good to give up all those points, give me the under, and that Falcons and Dallas game. For my NFL lock of the week, I'm going straight down to the bins. No, I'm not taking the Falcons. I wish I was. I don't feel that confident, but I am going with the over-under in the Falcons-Cowboys game. 51.5 is the number. Now, that begs me to say, you know what, man? Falcons, 30 points, three of their last four games. Dallas, maybe the passing attack gets us. We can't rush the passer. No! Vegas knows all those things, Dylon. I'm going under 51.5. Both these teams will start slow. It might be 0-0 after the first quarter before the Falcons pull away. Under 51. Falcons, Cowboys, lock it up.
You swag and surf.
You do. You swag and surf. Y'all like that?
I know it's your good, but the only thing you were right on in that entire pick was the fact that they would go under because you said it would be 0-0 after the first quarter. That was wrong. You said you weren't very confident. You should have been. You were wrong on your confidence.
Should have been confident?
Yeah, you should have been confident.
No, man.
Always, man.
What you got here?
Well, the game that a lot of people thought might be the game of the day was Detroit at Green Bay. And it was a bad weather game. Dylan said that was his pick for us. You thought Green Bay was going to win. And I told you, not so fast, because Detroit might be the best team in the NFL. I don't know what Jordan Love's going to do, and I don't think Malik Willis, if he has a play, is ready for Detroit with or without Aiden Hutchinson. Mm. Detroit might be the best team in the trenches in the NFL. If they're not, they are gosh darn close to it. Give me the Lions minus the 2.5. This is the only way I'm going to pass Mike is to go against Mike.
I don't think it matters where we play at. Doesn't matter about the conditions. We knew that coming in here. We didn't want to know if we validated anything. Are we going to validate being able to play in the weather? It doesn't matter, man. That's just the way you're built.
Oh, you validated me, Coach, and I appreciate that.
I love that, man. I love hearing him in the post game. All right, unfortunately, I got to go over to my ugly Kentucky-Tennessee. Kentucky was a 17-point dog at one point right there at the end. They actually pulled to within 3 of this game. They're blacking out Saturday night in Knoxville, in Neyland. They are far and away more talented than Kentucky. The line is 17.5, whatever you want to put it. Kentucky, we love the blue-collar version and the Mark Susie. They're not playing that way. I think Tennessee runs them out of the stadium on Saturday night, gets it done. Tennessee minus 17, wearing the all-black unis after the reveal video, fireworks going on, Neyland Stadium, the whole thing's rocking. Tennessee, I love it, man. Tennessee minus the points against Kentucky this weekend.
Tennessee minus the points. Boy, I can't wait till you're wrong on that one. Kentucky's got something to prove.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Oh, man, Kentucky scored that fourth quarter touchdown and only lose by 10, so I was definitely wrong on that one. But, yeah, it happens. I went 2-2 this weekend.
I mean, it's normal for you. You're spinning wrong a lot.
There you go. Which one of your three losses are you going
to
do here?
Well, I guess Dylan wants to do the wants me to do, yeah, right. wants to do the Army game that I picked, because let me tell you something. Going into this game, Tiff, I know you got to do the game, so you know this. But Army had scored 35 or more in 6 of 7 games. They had scored 40 two or more in 5 of 7. Bryson Daly was going into the game, had 26 combined touchdowns.
Led the team in rushing.
Yeah, only if he had played.
If only.
Air Force at Army. Our very own Tiffany Blackman is on the sidelines for this game. The over-under.
I didn't know she was at that one.
The over-under. You don't listen to her. The over-under is 41.5. Army has scored 42 or more in 5 of their 7 games.
Okay.
They've scored 35 or more in 6 of their 7. Bryson Daly, the quarterback, not Dyson Daniels, has got 26 total touchdowns, 19 of them rushing. Pick Army if you want with the cover. I don't care. I don't do covers in some of these games. I'm telling you to pick the over 41.5. Army might do it themselves.
Mm.
Psych! That's the wrong number!
What was the final on that one ended up being?
20-3.
Oh, man. You only missed it by about 20 points.
I'm going to side with you on this one.
Oh,
just because I was there and I know what took place last minute leading up to kickoff. And, you know, we were informed we would not have the Bryson Daly playing in that football game.
You know what? I actually just came up with an idea. We should do this. Let's get the morning shifters. Let's get the shifties involved. I'm going to put out a poll. Should Bo get this game taken off his record? Yes or no?
No.
But you got to put it in context that he was literally Tiff.
Game time, like we had no indication of it. So we were told, I was on the field, we were told right then.
It's simple. If you were in Vegas, would you get your money back? Answers.
Well, that's not. Hold on. No. That's not necessarily true because when there are injuries that happen right out of nowhere that has never been disclosed or sickness or whatever the reason is, there have been games that have been taken off the board by Vegas because of those things.
Yeah.
Where they say, you know what? I don't know how. Maybe they give you credit or whatever. You don't get your money back necessarily, but you get the credit. But they would take that off. They could have taken that off the board.
I would take this off your record.
The executive producer has decided, and his decision is he's going to let the shifties decide. So a poll will be out shortly. You vote yes or no.
I think the executive producer's copping out a little bit there. He could just man up, and this is the man up segment, and say, I'm making the executive decision.
Whoa. First of all, I've lightened up a little bit for you, because at first I said it wasn't coming off. Now I have had a slight change of heart, and I'm at least letting people vote.
Yeah, I'm sure Garrett might have told you that how they would have done it at Chick-fil-A. So.
What?
He's our resident Chick-fil-A employee. Look at him. He says, my pleasure. Every time you ask him to do something, he says, my pleasure. He even got the khaki pants on. Anyways, look, it is what it is. If you take it off, you don't. I mean, I'm going to catch Mike at the end of the day. There's still plenty of time left.
I'll let the shifties decide. I will.
I mean, we're on 9 games into the season in NFL. So we got, 8 more? And 9 more weeks because, you know, teams get byes in their 17-game schedule. And then we'll pick through the playoffs, won't we? Maybe those be our mandatory.
Sure.
Yeah. We got plenty of time.
Yeah,
I'm talking about playoffs in college, but yeah.
If for that sure. makes you feel better, if that makes you sleep better at night, then
beating Mike,
go ahead and look ahead to the future. When we come back here on the morning shift, Dave Archer joins us here on the show, the former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, will break down the win over the Cowboys. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here post a Falcons victory over the Cowboys. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Tiff, did you sign up for 4 years of service for the country while you're up there?
I did not, but I am grateful for the individuals that do go out and protect our country.
No question.
You know, I'm already going through the gauntlet here when I work with these two guys in the morning.
You're already signed up for a tour, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much called that. Dave, when it comes to this victory, what impressed you more? Another great performance by Kirk Cousins, or was it the defense trying to step things up and getting some sacks, finally, 3 in a game this season?
Yeah, I think you got to probably hang your hat on both of those, Tiff. I think those are two really good points. I think that, you know, Kirk continues to be that kind of that guiding light, if you will, a guy you can hang your hat on, save the Seattle game where it seemed like he was a little off in that game. For the most part, he's been very accountable and a guy you can really lean on. Bijan Robinson becomes that guy that you, man, workhorse. He touched the ball, I think, 26, 27 times yesterday for right around 150 yards. He was dynamic. And you continue to see guys around Kirk making plays. I mean, Drake goes up the ladder early in the game before he went out with the hip and made a couple of big-time grabs. Mooney continues to make plays. Ray-Ray McCloud made a couple of really good plays, made the touchdown catch, but he also made a third-down catch that extended a drive. So all those guys continue to do well, and obviously the offensive line continues to protect. I think the defensive side of the ball, you know, other than the opening drive, and Mike, I know you're probably honed in on this too. The first, my key to the game, and Bo remembers this, I said, well, I think this is a good run after the catch team, and they're going to need to do that if they want to move the football, Dallas, because they're not running the ball very well. And lo and behold, the first three plays out of the box, they've got like 50 yards of yak yards after catch. And then you begin to kind of rein them in a little bit, and you're doing a pretty good job. And then all of a sudden you get that last drive, and I know they're kind of trying to eat the clock and give yards and eat the clock, but I was a little disturbed by the last drive of the game. But I thought the defense really played a pretty solid game.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about that, Dave. I think if you take away the last drive and the first drive, like, the defensive stats look a lot better.
Yeah,
I'm with you, man. All of a sudden, Jake Ferguson out the gate turns into, you know, Justin Jefferson or something from Minnesota. It was kind of crazy to watch. One of the things I want to talk about, too, and I hate that it's taken us this long, honestly, to get here, and I'm just as guilty as anybody. Seeing some of the managerial issues that the Cowboys are facing kind of, Dave, popped up in my head how good Raheem Morris has been in situational football and some of the calls he's made, some of the fourth downs he's gone for. It seems like he's almost batting 1,000 in some of these late game calls or situational calls. We talked about it this morning, the fake punts that have popped up now 2 weeks in a row that you've squashed, the fourth down stops. Raheem Morris seems like he's operating at an extremely high level, and I know you saw some of those same things yesterday.
Yeah, so I heard you talking about it post-game, Mike, and it's a great point. The overall composition of this staff seems to be really melded together. I think that, you know, there's certain things that bother you. There's some shortcomings that every team has, whether it's, you know, your ability to stop that short passing game or toss up the run game consistently. They're getting some yardage on kickoff return some. But as far as a unit with Marquise Williams and Jimmy Lake and, of course, Zach Robinson as the coordinators and all those guys underneath Raheem, Raheem's the guy that's standing up in front of everybody in those staff meetings and saying, hey, this is what we need to concentrate on. This is where we need to be. And so I would agree with you completely. I think that the way they're buttoned up on little things, and you and I both got pounded in our head as players, the little things are going to make what the big thing happen. They're going to make the big thing happen. And so if you're Natron Brooks and you're playing tight coverage on a fake punt, and you know, you almost come up with an interception, but you also take away their opportunity to extend a drive right there to begin the second half. That's a huge play. Gives us a short field opportunity. I mean, those little things like that. Ray-Ray McCloud catches a ball, you know, 3 yards short of the first down, and they're tutoring those guys, hey, immediately get north and south. And that's something, maybe a second nature deal that receivers do, but they're doing those kind of things. It's not like, hey, well, you talk about that as a young receiver throughout your career. No, you've got to emphasize those things. And that's what Raheem's doing. I think you're bang on, Mike. I think he's done such a great job with the overall picture of what they're supposed to be, and they continue to execute that way.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the defense, Arch, because they held, you know, CeeDee Lamb to his second lowest receiving yard output when he's been targeted more than 10 times or more or whatever. And I think that's incredible. But I thought that Caden Ellis and Arnold Ebiketie had their best games of the season. What'd you think about how they played yesterday?
Yeah, the CeeDee Lamb thing, you know, CeeDee got banged up early in the game, so I'm gonna credit some of that to that. And even he was a warrior to stay in that game and fight, because they didn't really have any offensive weapons. Ferguson was pretty good, as Mike mentioned, but Lamb really fought as hard as he could for Dallas to try to give them an opportunity. He even caught the late touchdown after his shoulder was completely torn up. But to give him some credit there. But no question about it, Arnold Ebiketie has been continuing to come on. We talked about him for the last several weeks, as you start talking about, okay, where are the sacks? Where are the pressures? Ebiketie continues to kind of hone his skill and what he can and can't get away with. And I think he's becoming a guy that you hope maybe he would have become maybe last year, maybe just a little bit longer to develop here, but he seems to be coming on some. I thought the entire defensive front turned it up last week or this week. You could see it in Grady Jarrett's eyes when the flip of the coin, he was going to be a monster. I thought Goldman was pretty good on the interior. I thought Onyemata was pretty good. Street back on the field did some good stuff on the interior. And Judon, it looked like, had a little bit more pep in his step, maybe because of the guys around him were playing well. But Caden Ellis' ability to diagnose stuff from that linebacker position, he made a huge play in that opening drive. I know you guys remember after those three plays you talked about with the run after catch, he makes an unbelievable play on a three-count screen where he knifes underneath the tackle and makes a tackle for loss and forces a 3rd and 12, and we get off the field there in that opening drive, and it looked like Dallas was just going to go right down and shove it in the end zone. And Caden made a couple plays like that throughout the game that were difference-making plays that were either for a loss or right at the line of scrimmage that changed the change situation, changed the down and distance situation for McCarthy to call for Dak Prescott. So I thought that he made a lot of plays, no question.
Dave Archer on the WadeFord.com hotline with us, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. Dave, it's been a while since the Falcons have had a start to the season like this. Could you kind of just give us a pulse of what it's like within the organization, given they're in control in the NFC South now, too? A lot of good things happening.
Yeah, 6-3. I think, Tiff, you got to go back to, you know, you hate to mention the 16 season because you don't want to, you draw any comparisons. This team has some of those. They're not quite as dynamic yet on offense as that 16 team, but you got to go back to 2016 when they've started 6-3. And to be where you are, especially what's happening tonight with Kansas City playing Tampa tonight, if the Chiefs knock Tampa off tonight, all of a sudden you look up because you got the two games in hand against the Bucs. You're three games potentially in front of everybody in your division. I can't remember the last time we were kind of in that position. Maybe you have to go back to 16. If you remember, that 16 team kind of stumbled to 7-5 by mid-December, and it was Kansas City that came in here and beat Atlanta in December and dropped them to 7-5. And then, of course, they got on that roll that rolled them into the Super Bowl. But those are great feelings to have, Tiff. The organization's excited. There's a lot of energy around the organization, a lot of energy in the city right now. I think the fan base is starting to kind of sink their teeth into, hey, this is a pretty good team. We need to get behind this team. I thought the building was really good yesterday. I don't know, Mike, how you felt about it. There's a lot of Cowboy fans there, but I thought the Falcon fans did a great job of drowning them out. How many offside or false start penalties did Dallas have? Those administrative penalties, you got to give the crowd some credit there on that stuff with the silent count and their inability to operate. I think there were 6 penalties that were pre-snap penalties on Dallas. Mm-hmm. That's a crowd scenario. So that tells you about energy in the building.
Hey, Arch, Bijan Robinson's got 173 touches this season for 935 yards from scrimmage with 5 touchdowns. He's averaging about 5.5 yards a touch. Is he going under the radar? I mean, shouldn't he be getting a little more pub? This guy's one of the most dynamic players and versatile players in the NFL right now.
Did you do all that math yourself, or did Mike
you know the answer to that, Dave? No.
There are a lot of finger counting this morning at 5 a.m.
Does he have his shoes off? Is he using his toes on some of this stuff?
I will not confirm nor deny that.
I don't know. Is he flying under the radar, boy? I mean, you and I, we see him every weekend, and so I think we appreciate him here. Is he nationally being appreciated? Really haven't paid enough attention to the national stuff. And frankly, the national stuff seems to downplay Atlanta and has for years. And so I think Bijan continues to do what he's doing. He's going to get the recognition. I guarantee he's getting the recognition from his peers, because there's been guys over the first 9 games that are still trying to find some of their uniform. He's screwed people in the ground. The guys have lost shoes, all sorts of stuff, helmets, trying to find this guy and put him on the ground. And so I guarantee you he's got the respect of his teammates. That's number one. He's got the respect of his peers would be number two. And if the media comes along for the dance, so be it. I think they eventually will. But he's doing – did you see the play Barkley made last night, Saquon Barkley?
Oh, my goodness.
That's Olympian.
And the reverse jump over the guy. I mean, unbelievable. That's the kind of stuff Bijan's doing. And you know, I know Saquon's getting a little bit more love. He's been in the league a little bit longer. But those two guys are dynamic players. They're very similar to one another. And I know Mike's made the comparison. I have, too. And you kind of reluctantly make it. But there was a guy named Barry Sanders that could make you miss in a phone booth. And these two guys are doing some of those kind of things. Now, they got to do it a longer period of time. But I'm certainly glad number 7's on our team.
Yeah, and to real quick, Arch, I think that you look at Barry Sanders. He was so good at doing a move that sets up another move, and that's kind of what Bijan brings to the table, to your point. One of the other guys I want to talk to you about before we have to let you go, Arch, Darnell Mooney. Not only does he have the five catches, almost 100 yards, I think he had 88 on the day, but the two plays on fourth down that I think were such big plays in this football game, both times Kirk letting the ball go before Darnell even gets his eyes around. And I think that when you're doing that, you've done such a good job talking to Kirk about this in your conversations. They are on the same page. And I thought it was eye-opening. Your conversation with Kirk after the game yesterday, him talking about Darnell was a pro's pro and one of the best he had ever been around in terms of being a pro and doing things like that. I thought that was huge praise from a guy like Kirk Cousins.
No question about it, Mike. This is a guy that you have to go back to 21, had a 1,000-yard season in Chicago, and then kind of was a lost guy in Chicago because of some of the acquisitions they made. Obviously, DJ Moore came in there, and he kind of became that second, third guy and kind of a lost piece. Well, here he and Kirk have melded together, and it's been fun to watch. I didn't realize Mooney was as good a route runner as he is. I mean, we knew he had great speed to blow the top off. He gets clean, and we almost saw him take a little short hitch route yesterday, take it to the house for about 80 yards. He does just an eyelash from getting that done. But his ability to run routes, and obviously the little rub route where he gets clean there, there's not a lot going on there, just patience. But the route you're talking about, the second third down he catches, it was a huge play where he runs a double move and then throws back shoulder. I mean, he completely screws the corner in the ground. I mean, his ability to run routes has been phenomenal. I think Kirk really appreciates that part of it. I mean, a lot of guys can run. A lot of guys can, I guess, catch the football. But can you put that other piece of the art together and maybe just dissecting a cornerback where he has no idea where you're going? That's what Mooney's doing. I think Kirk loves that.
Dave, as always, great having you here with us on a Monday. Thanks for the insight.
Good to have you. See ya.
That was Atlanta Falcons former QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here on the morning shift. Up next.
Yeah, it's rivalry week,
yeah,
Tiff.
Yeah, okay, cool. Go ahead.
It's rivalry week. And so I want to commiserate in the misery.
Last week was rivalry week.
No, we're going to Nollins, and I want to have fun with the misery that is the New Orleans Saints.
Of course you do. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. This is the morning shift. We'll be right back with Life of Squid on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Tomorrow is the day the college football playoff rankings come out. So I had to process that because it's already that point in the year. And I also keep wanting to say BCS for some reason. It hasn't been BCS for like
quite a while.
How long?
Tomorrow's a big day for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say you've got the trade deadline
deadline
in the
tomorrow
NFL
as well.
A lot happening.
Yeah, that's a big one as well. So, yeah.
So you find out. And I don't know. It's weird for me that the rankings don't mean as much to me as they would, because four teams are going to get automatic bids. And so I think it matters really who's in the at large. And so you kind of have who might have an inside track. Cause some of those teams aren't going to have maybe a chance to win their conference, or they might already be in the early poll as far as inside the top 12. And they could go and maybe lose in the conference title game, if that makes sense.
I wonder how many teams are alive in the SEC right now. Like, how many still have a shot to get to Atlanta for the SEC championship after this past week?
A&M, Texas, Georgia, pretty sure LSU.
LSU's, yeah.
And?
I don't know. Tennessee's got to be there. Because they're top 10.
Yeah, Tennessee's only got one loss.
I don't think Bama has a shot at it with two losses, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I mean, two losses gets you. It all depends on what happens, obviously. But I don't know, man. It's just crazy. It just feels wide open right now.
Because it is. And I think it feels partly the wide openness is because of no divisions. And, you know, if when you lose it in a division, it's like it's different because you know you're going to play the team head to head, right? And so it's going to eliminate. But without the head to head, it kind of makes it a much muddier picture as far as how it looks.
Definitely
so.
Does, man. It seems like you got to have a rocket science degree if you're going to figure out who's going.
Well, I don't have a rocket science degree, but I'm as smart as a rocket scientist.
I cannot in good conscience let you get away with that statement.
Yeah, I was going to say, what even is a rocket scientist? Is that aerospace engineering?
Are you
a rocket scientist? Yeah.
Hell, I don't know. Why would I know?
You just, well, because you're the smartest guy.
Smartest one.
Yeah, but being the smartest guy in this room, I mean, you know, that's what I am. But I
you didn't say in this room.
Well, compared to y'all, I'm a rocket scientist. How about that?
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll let you have it. You sure. can have a cookie today.
Don't forget W Sauce. Fireshire breakfast sauce. I just post my meat on Instagram. My guys at Owl Inn, the New Realm, Owl Inn Lager. I'm actually going to the game tomorrow night. Kennesaw State basketball home opener. I'm going to go hang out with my boy Chaz and all those guys and watch a little Kishy basketball and the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic.
Before you get to the classic, are you going to get a red carpet or anything? Are you going to get any treatment like I got over the weekend? Don't know if you saw the Georgia State game, but they had on notable Georgia State alums. And so, you know, after Ludacris and Julia Roberts, you know.
Did your name get, like, wrote somewhere?
Person, you know,
you got red carpet?
It was a CBS Sports Network game, but shout out to the producer.
Wow.
Morales that did that game.
Were you like?
I was informed by some people here and then by my producer for my game, his brother was working the Georgia State game, so that's who else sent me the video.
Oh, wow. So you kind of got at the very end. Oh, and our very own Tiffany Blackman.
You know.
Thank you for you. Yeah, that's no, that's awesome.
Next to Julia Robertson, you know.
No, yeah, because those things go together.
I'm just trying to pull.
Did you
just say
Julia Robertson?
That's what they had her on. I didn't know.
They said Julia Roberts and Tiffany Blackman.
They showed pictures of people, and I was last.
Nice.
You hilarious.
Continue your segment. I didn't mean to.
Hilarious.
Hopefully you get that treatment tomorrow.
Well, I don't need that treatment because, you know, I'm just a humble guy from humble beginnings, Steph, and I like to live my life with a certain
amount
of humility.
Just you're putting on a great golf
tournament, right? Yeah, Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic. Look, go to 99 The Game website, click events, and figure out how you can participate in it today. New Orleans Saints have got a lot going on, and it starts with the fact that they lost their seventh straight game, and there was some stuff on Twitter that Derek Carr had to address in his post-game press conference, but then Alvin Kamara as well made some comments, and some think he might have threw some shade at his head coach when he was asked about the confidence that the team had.
I don't know. I feel like dudes is confident. I mean, it's a lot of guys that played a lot of football in here. Like, you just talked about Tyron. I think he's a confident dude. I think DeMario, Kim, me, Derek, I think, and then even some of the younger dudes. I think Chris and even Tipton. And, like, we got guys that are confident. Defensive, Brazee. We got Grando. We got Pete. Like, Alonso. I can keep going. We got guys. I'm naming guys, you know. I think there's confidence there. But it might not be a confidence in something else. So.
What's the something else? I mean, what is the something else? Because I don't know. Do you know?
Well, I don't, but you did see this goes back to the post-game handshake between he and Sean Payton and, you know, them kind of talking to one another. People wondered if he said, hey, come get me. But, yeah, there's he had a great game, and I 100% understand that Kamara's got a lot of confidence. I agree with him on that.
Well,
it might not be a confidence in something else.
His contract's been redone, so he's going to be there, so he might outlast Dennis Allen. Then former Saints wide receiver, and you know he's just. I'm not a huge Michael Thomas fan. I'm gonna go ahead and just put that out there. He's also a little bit of a malcontent at times. He goes off about the quarterback. They fired all them coaches trying to cover his flaws up. They still did the same blank. Dude tried to lie and say I was jealous of them making Chris wide receiver one whole time. He can't even get him a decent ball. He needed his blank whooped. Dude, scary and panic and just throw the ball, get him the blank out. He's so blank, but. I guess I'll say but. He's so but, he said the other word. So Derek Carr, for you, I've been told, y'all, he's blank, and it's sad. And then he gave him the middle finger. So he went off about Derek Carr, and Derek Carr got asked about it in his post-game presser.
Love for Mike. You know, and when he does that, I don't really care for it, obviously. You know, I've had so many teammates over the years, and he's like the one dude that didn't get along with me, you know. And I don't know what I did to him. I don't know why he feels that way. I'm sorry, you know, for whatever he's dealing with to make him feel like he's got to do that. I don't know, you know. But he's never called me during any of this, you know. My phone number has never changed. I've in fact called him on different occasions, you know. You know, just just to try. And sometimes you can try as hard as you want, and it just doesn't work out, and that's okay. So I don't know why he feels any type of way.
Handled it well, man. Hats off to him. He handled it well. No matter what side you're on, he handled that well.
Is that a question you want to get at, that should be asked though, in a post-game press conference about why a guy that's not even on your team anymore is going off?
I get the immediacy of it because it happened then. Might be when's the next available? A Monday thing?
It sucks for all the other media members in that press conference more than it does for Derek Carr, because that's why a lot of guys are guarded in instances like that, because they know which direction the camera is facing. And next time they're asked by just somebody else in that room, he's going to be a little more irritated than he would have before.
All right, that's your Life of Squid. Up next, we'll find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.